Hello, this is Dr. Tony with the Crooked Spine Show. What I'm going to talk about today is my interview with Dr. Bob, Rancho Eye Doctor. He's an optometrist in the area for about 32 years or so. He's been in practice since 1984. He'll tell you this on his interview. And he understands the old school optometry where it's based on books on science, understanding how to do that first in application. He says in the interview, we'll talk about this, how things have kind of changed since then. But his biggest thing over the last 30 years is focusing on how to keep people overall healthy, using their vision to understand their overall health. He talks about through his eye test, he actually saved someone's life from an aneurysm, okay, which they may have lost their life because of that injury. But also they'll talk about with scoliosis, how it can be affected through the eyes. Also too, he talks a lot about is with eyeglasses, the right prescription is based on the screen distance. So if you're using an iPad, a phone, a desktop, where it is located to on your eye periphery is very, very important. So we'll talk about all these things too. My biggest thing with Dr. Bob, he's very learned. He's read a lot of books. He also mentors a lot of young adults and kids on how to go to grow up the right way, meaning on attitude and behavior, have success in whatever they want to do. All right, so enjoy the interview and I will see you afterwards. Hello again, I'm Dr. Tony. This is Dr. Bob. He's going to talk about his shop real quick and what he does, how long he's been in practice, and what his overall goal is with his patients. Again, this is more about staying healthy, so part of that is your vision, if you realize it or not. And because we're on screen so much now, maybe your phone, your iPad, or your monitor, realize how important that is. So Dr. Bob, tell us about yourself first.
Well, first of all, I've been practicing. I've always wanted to be an optometrist ever since I was like a junior in high school.
Great.
And I've been practicing since 1981. I worked for other doctors in different locations, and I always had a tilt on how does stress affect your vision, and how that, and how your vision also, how does your vision affect what you do in sports, in learning, and even on the job? And I always had this interest, and as we are doing a lot more detail work, close-up work, both with the printed book, but much more so with digital devices,
yes,
it's even come into more relevancy of what I'm doing. I've been in the shopping center, Baseline Haven, in Rancho Cucamonga, since 1989.
In this
center, I had an office
before,
over there,
okay.
And J.P. Morgan moved into my space.
Thank
JP because they built this office for me. It's like winning the lottery. So something came out.
That's nice.
Quite good at it. We used to call it Chase Manhattan Bank. It's now JP Morgan Chase. Anyway, so I've been doing this. I have a great staff here.
Oh, gosh.
And I really enjoy more and more what I'm doing. I'm going to be 61 years old this year. And no real plans of retirement because I really enjoy working with the patients. We've made some big differences in patients' lives, quite a few. We've had long-term patients. My longest one, I started when she was 6 years old, and now she brings a 22 or 23-year-old coming in from Garden Grove. We, like I said, saved some lives, but most importantly, we really care here.
And realize, with Dr. Bob, I've known him for a long time, personally, even through the Upland Chamber, too. A lot of it is he promotes keeping people healthy, not only their vision, but also their mind also. He loves to read books, and he can quote probably 80 books off the top of his head, and he loves people to understand, hey, look, this is a way that you maintain your mind along with your vision so you keep your overall body healthy. That's the purpose.
You know, one of the things too, Tony, and
yes,
I know during the introduction, I convey an excitement and an enthusiasm because I have it. It's genuine. I've seen what it says. I know what my vision is. I still, for the most part, don't wear glasses.
It's magnetic, too. People come in that are not sometimes happy. He makes them happy because he's an example of that.
Here's an example, and it happened this week at the Upland Chamber.
Yes.
On our last
breakfast,
our first Friday. Lady comes in, just started talking. I wore my Dr. Bob shirt.
Yeah.
And she was in business. I don't know if she was a realtor. And she, for some reason, she's had most advanced eyes surgery, and I don't mean because of disease, I'm talking about refractive, to make her see clearly, stuff I've never seen before, but I've just barely heard of, and I'm not even sure if it's approved by the FDA for everybody, but she was done as an investigatory.
Okay.
It wasn't legal or anything, and it worked out perfectly.
Pilot.
Big dry eye problems.
Now,
now, and she had some before.
Okay.
And I said, you know something? I have a drop that might just work for you. And she told me what she has, and I'm not going to mention any names.
Of course.
But of course, you see some of this advertised on TV. And this drop, you might understand it, is the mast cell, is the antihistamine, mast cell stabilizer. In other words, that's the things, that's the cells, if they break apart, cause all the irritation, the itching, and the dryness. One drop a day. She did this. This is unbelievable.
So it almost brings down this the stress system too.
Well,
it calms
everything
relax.
Down. But when I'm what I'm trying to get at is this is the excitement I have in talking about.
So you're not choosing in your office. She's
not
like,
only that,
hey,
and I went up to her, and I'm not. I'm just saying, come
you
on,
you
look
in her eyes.
I'm just going to put the drop in.
Yeah.
I said, you don't have to pay. I just want to see if it works.
That's it.
Because it's a pretty innocuous drop. It's not like a steroid. It's not an antibiotic. And it's not antiviral, and if it doesn't work, fine. And eventually we will examine you, because I just don't really like doing it this way, but I just wanted to get you in, because I want to see the reaction, and it was a good one.
Fantastic. But it also, all it does is take that extra caring that you have, that's why I'm interviewing you, that you do this as who you are, not what you do.
Yeah, it's just the real interest in people. I mean, I belong to Three Chambers, have a big following on LinkedIn. I mean, it's like, I'm pretty good with this. LinkedIn, big thing on Facebook, three Facebook fan pages.
Well, you work on your practice, not just in your practice.
Yeah, but when I'm, as a solo practitioner, of course,
yes,
I work in it. And
yeah,
that is me, but that's my choice to do that. Work on the practice, absolutely. And I have a great staff that deals with all the back office stuff that I really hate dealing with.
Yeah, the insurance stuff, man.
They're good at it, and thank God they're good at it, because I'm certainly not. And this has been, like I said, the ideal optometric, everything I could have hoped for within a practice,
well,
at right now.
When the staff gives you that leeway to go, okay, you take care of the on the practice with the videos, with the talk to the patients, everything else, they deal with that. Some doctors that I know, they spend a full day during the week doing insurances. It would drive me crazy. Having someone that does that for you, that's like having another wife, having someone that is your other half.
It is so good that really, like I said, I don't have to deal with stuff.
Yeah.
I don't feel like dealing with. I don't have to deal with types of cases. And I mean, not that I want to see the patients.
Yeah.
But I can, there's a better person, if there's a better person to do something and delegating it, and anybody will tell you in business, that's one of the most important things that you can do. We delegate.
And work. And if anything, what I've read too or listened to is work on your strengths. If your strengths are here with a patient and doing your stuff on the practice, focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
Let someone else learn, and even I'd even pay someone to learn all the other stuff that back office does. That we don't have to worry about it.
I mean, I thought for 5 or 10 minutes about, do I want to take a course so-and-so and deal with social media? Heck no. By the time I learn this stuff, it'll be obsolete to begin with. So pick someone who's quite adroit with it, if that be the right word. I mean, I scored 410 on my SATs in English.
Hey.
It was one of the worst scores ever. But
Presby, you don't want to see my score either. Let's take a quick break, Dr. Bob.
Okay.
Where are Shelby's videos?
Shelby's videos are all the most recent ones.
Okay, they're on your YouTube channel also?
Yep.
Okay, I'll look at
and
those.
And I've got three fan pages now, the Personally Developed Self, the New York one. And, you know, and then some teenagers, probably low 20s, wanting to do some stuff. You know, there's just so much stuff out there, and it's exciting. You know, I'm going to be 61 this year. My dyslexic sweep 16, as my sister coined that. I don't know if she coined the term, but it definitely is. And it's really quite a bit. But one of the things, too, are we on?
Yeah, we're always going to, but I can always clip it out, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But one of the things, Tony, is that as I've been practicing, I'm getting more and more excited about everything. What we're able to deal with the patients, the changes we've made in patients' lives, and dealing with just the type of patients who I want to deal with, the type of problems, and everything else, whether it be pathology or disease, that feels a little bit out of my expertise, we refer it. I'm a good source of referral.
Why do you like dealing with those patients specifically?
Because I feel, one, I'm very qualified in doing it.
Okay.
Secondly, the niche is getting bigger and bigger with individuals who are sitting in front of computer screens that are using digital devices and heaven knows what's going to be with these 2 and 3 year olds who are constantly addicted to this. Yeah. Believe me, the psychologists are going to have a new form of addiction to write in their little book about what's happening, because you can't pull these kids away in some of the cases. And it's knocking down hand-eye coordination. I mean, I looked at my great niece,
yes,
who's about 40 years old, God, doing a jigsaw puzzle. I thought it was fantastic. You got left and right. And you know, anybody who wants to look this up, there's a gentleman who wrote in the 1930s, his name is A.M. Skeffington, S-K-E-F-F-I-N-G-T-O-N, about how vision is developed through anti-gravity, through movement, through listening, and vision is the emergent that comes out of all this. You can look that up, look it up on Google, and you'll get some real interesting information. This stuff isn't even in the schools anymore. And so, because a lot of the profession, and some of it's really interesting, is going much more medically based, which is fine. I choose to deal much more with what's called a functional base,
yes,
how stress causes changes in vision. It's a two-way street, how what you do affects your vision, and how your visual skills and abilities affects your ability to produce in school, at the workplace, and even in sports.
So it's application of what you're doing, not just the vision itself.
Right.
It's not just the overall picture of what they're doing in their lifestyle, at work, at home, right, at school, whatever it is. It's not just, okay, here's your vision right now, and that's all I'm worried about.
You know, it used to be, Tony, I would just ask the question, do you work with a computer?
Exactly.
Now I ask them, what type of computer? Desktop,
laptop,
iPad, device. Why? Here's the individual, and you can appreciate this in your field as a chiropractor. Here's an individual who gets prescribed a regular pair of bifocals or progressives, being without the line, and they're looking right here and an iPad. Well, that's not too bad. Heck, maybe you don't have the exact distance because it's a little further away. Or a laptop. You put that person right here, and all of a sudden, and what this represents is the line of the bifocal where it should be. All of a sudden, it's up here, the person's got to lean here, and they don't even get the darn distance correctly, because most people, surprisingly, I mentioned, I used to think they worked at 22, 23. They're out there at 2.5 feet. They're out there at 30 inches. And what they're doing is they're leaning into it and tilting their head back. So you can imagine the neck, the back, lower extremities problem. What's going on?
So by using a computer screen, for example, a monitor versus an iPad versus even a phone, your body position changes, so the stress in your body plus your vision, like you said, with bifocals, is the bottom part of the lens, trying to tilt your head back and change your overall posture, causing stress to your body beyond just trying to adjust your vision to whatever screen you're using.
Right.
Okay.
And also, Tony, the problem is that these people are looking at a different distance. So a lot of times, so what we do a lot of times, especially in the people, individuals in their 40s or above, late 40s and above, we have to prescribe a separate bifocal where the top part is for the computer, which is out there at about 26, 30 inches.
Yes.
And the reading is at the text that they're going back and forth is at about 16 inches. Because lo and behold, there's the individual prescribed. So I'll give you a pair of computer glasses, but they're single vision. But that single vision, as that person's getting into the late 40s and above, that does not have a big range of depth.
So the new glasses you prescribe based on their functionality
you
of
take
the
measurement
phone, where they actually are going to actually use that glasses in that prescription.
Right. Okay. You got to look at what the person, where the person's actually, the distance and the height they're looking at and so forth. I tell you, it's really amazing. And you know, Tony, I kind of bounce off topics all over the place. If you knew my visual system, you know,
I just know you,
why.
That's why I'm interviewing, because you have that knowledge of beyond just optometry.
This kid comes in, unfortunately, and you know how we're dealing with obesity with young people.
Yes.
With this, because of this thing, they don't get outside. They're looking at these Bacata instruments all day long, devices, whatever you want to call them. And the father goes up to me, and he says, "Doc, I think my kid has Alice in Wonderland syndrome." I go, "What the heck?" And there is something called Alice in Wonderland syndrome.
You looked it up, you Googled it.
Googled it.
Okay.
And same thing, you know, sloppy terminology. So anyway, here's this kid, and he's about 40, 50 pounds overweight at 8 years of age. I wasn't even sure he was conversive, but he was very conversive and very articulate and a very bright kid.
Okay.
And I go, let me ask you a question. How much of these devices are you looking at?
Devices, laptop, phone,
laptop, okay. Phone, screen, whatever the heck they're looking at. He says, Doc, when I'm on that thing, I don't even blink.
Wow.
And now, so I said, what is Alice in Wonderland? He says, the vision starts to morph, my focusing is going in and out.
Okay.
And I showed him something, a lens. He says, God, that's relaxing.
So his body was just stressing the whole
time. He was stressing because the whole visual system, you know, and I believe this, and I think you can verify this being a chiropractor, the amount of innervation per muscle fiber is highest in the eyes.
Yes.
And
that's exactly true.
And the whole neurological ramifications, if you're under stress and so forth, and these things are firing, both in the sense that you have two systems in the eye. One is aiming, which means where is it? And the other one is focusing, what is it? And a lot of times these two systems don't work together. I don't care if that person is better than 20/20 sight. And notice I use the word sight, not vision.
Well, and part of it is the fatigue factor once you do it for a period of time.
Right. And some of these individuals are just, you know, it's been great for my business because even in their 30s, if people, Doc, I'm losing. Usually, vision used to be stable after 25, 30 until they hit their 40s and they need reading glasses. Hey, I got people, Doc, the vision's blurring on the computer and I can't see the road signs at night. And this is happening to people in their 30s.
Oh, gosh. First, and before it was in their 40s and 50s.
And like I said, and as I was quoting earlier to you, and before we started the discussion, Darryl Boyd Harmon wrote, I don't know if you'd call him a biophysicist, back in the 50s, he wrote a thing, and you can look this up too, Darryl Boyd Harmon, H-A-R-M-O-N, the coordinated classroom, about how to design, I guess he was probably one of the first ergonomists in developing, ergonomics.
Got it.
Developing the different types of classroom, but he worked together with people who are looking at vision. The top people, these individuals,
are
unbelievable about the knowledge they are. I mean, you had guys named like I said, Skeffington, Homer Hendrickson. You had Getman, G-E-T-M-A-N. You can look these people up, and they had a whole thing called developmental vision. And there's areas still in optometry who belong to groups called the College of Optometrists in Visual and Development.
Okay.
Not that I'm one of them, but I've gone to their lectures and they're great. The Optometric Extension Program, again, deals with function and how people are able to cope with what they are actually doing. You know, one of the things that's very important in the relationship to sports, and I think you can understand this,
yes,
that when a person's under stress, periphery shuts down.
Yes.
What they?
Why is that? Because it's sympathetic, parasympathetic?
It could be because.
Or the short-term fight or flight.
Again.
Okay.
I'm not going to give you an exact neurological. All I know is that it happens. If I were to also shut down the periphery, and I had you make a hole like this,
yes.
I think I did this. The size of something gets a lot smaller when you don't have good periphery.
Yes.
And if you're a quarterback and a linebacker is coming after you and you're in distress, just ask the Giant who got,
your
or the
judge.
Washington Redskin, where LT, Lawrence Taylor, caused the compound fracture as far as that concerned of his knee. I think it was Theismann. And anyway, so this is things that are looking at. And what's interesting with people, another area that, again, you can look up a lot of this on Google, but vision training, how do we make the visual system better at coping with stress? Not through exercise, but for actually training it. Not like exercise is muscle strength, like a person who skates. You're not building muscle strength, you're building coordination.
Well, I saw one of your videos about that, how to train the eyes and exercises. I'll link it to this video so people have that. A lot of it is, like you had mentioned, I think, in your video, is how two things come together and also depth perception also.
And also the ease of which you can do it.
Got it, okay.
Because there's some people, you know, one of the things I usually ask an individual, which will tell me they have, you know, I was talking about the binocular system,
yes.
Not only where it is, but what it is, and how much stress Can I put that system under visually? And I could do that with lenses or prisms and still have that person maintain single, clear, comfortable vision.
Wow.
And one of the questions I ask my patients, and it's a good one for you to look at, Tony, do you get motion sickness in the back seat of a car?
Okay.
Versus the front seat.
And people do.
Versus driving. Driving's the least. Front seat's less, and back seat, if there be a problem, is the worst. Why? Because you have all this stuff here. If there is a binocular problem,
okay,
of what's in front of you here, what's in front of you there, and what's passing you by here. Front seat, there's much less. It's what's in front of you. And when you're driving, you have one factor. You got tactual stimulation, which backs up the vision. So there's not as much ambiguity of where the person is.
And you're controlling the motion, so you can predict and where you're going to shift.
Exactly, which is a good point. Okay. You're actually controlling the whole person.
Especially on a winding road or a switchback on the Big Bear or Arrowhead, you can control that. So that's why I would assume the driver has that least amount of...
a chance of having it. And perhaps this other person would be pretty good. If they have a good visual system where they don't get motion sickness anywhere.
Okay.
But if it's
going
to happen, it's going to happen in the back seat, not the front, and certainly not the driving. It will happen the least for driving.
Well, Doc, quick question for you, too, along with driving. People have accidents before, whiplash accidents or injuries to the neck. Has that affected any of their vision or how you treat them?
I can think it could. I got three good belts to my head.
Okay.
Sleigh riding, head first into a tree.
Happens.
Playing football without equipment and getting tackled on the grass. But when the grass is 20 degrees, it's like cement.
Doesn't happen in California, but it's in New York.
And giving a kid a back breaker and following wrestling like I was in 6 years. My eyes are misaligned like this. And one of the things that's very important that gets short shrift in some of the examinations, and we should talk about sometimes... Yep, listen to Seth Godin about a race to the bottom.
I'm listening right now with Jack. Jay Kim just interviewed him. A new podcast guy. Yes.
Seth Godin?
Yes.
Oh, this is great. Will you be missed, Tony, if you're not there? Same with me.
Exactly.
But anyway, I could say yes for me. I'm sure you could say yes for you.
I'd hope.
I hope nothing. I know damn well I will be.
Wow.
Anyway. I start with these people when they're 6 years old and I have the 21-year-old daughters as patients. Anyway, that's not cockiness. That's just being proud of what I do.
Confident.
Extremely. In this field. Other fields that I'm not confident in, boom, it gets referred right out.
Don't have time for that stuff.
So anyway, one of the biggest things that is not measured, and if there's a least bit of misalignment in the eyes, can cause extreme, in some cases, but some type of visual discontent, loss of place with reading, stressed out eyes, and that is what's called the vertical fovea.
Okay.
And what that is, I can set up when there's no stimulus for both eyes to lock on a target, and I can do that with the device called prism behind my instrument, which is called a paropter. I can separate out line it up. Now, most people do line up right at zero.
Okay.
I don't, but I know what my problem is. So half the problem, Tony, is knowing that you have a problem.
Exactly.
You know, once you know you have a problem and that it's not all in your head, it's pretty, you feel that much better about it to begin with, but it's nice to be able to solve the problem too.
Well, once you know the problem, you can actually find solutions.
Not always, but I'll give you an example of that in just a minute. But anyway, so if you're misaligned like this, you know, the eyes can make abduction and adduction movements all day long, but they cannot do this one eye against the other. They can, but it's very straining and stressful. So when you show this person that, one of the things is, God, it feels easier. And some people, they don't. Some people rather be misaligned. They just rather give up binocularity and not fight it. But the other people go, God, that's great. It looks like it's in 3D. It feels a lot easier. I feel a lot stressed out with this. I'm able to go from line to line without it jumping. And the differences that you make are great. And we had one that where there was a need for prism.
So
and
how do you change that? What do you do to change that?
What you can do basically is you can work around it, but it's just easy to prescribe a little bit of prism to put the, and you're putting the image where the eye wants to be.
Got it.
That's
okay.
A compensatory, not necessarily corrective situation.
But you're getting the result.
Now, when I was talking about
We can go back a second. The result would be less stress on the eyes, right, stress on the head, stress on the neck,
everything. Being able to perform a lot better.
Okay.
Knowing that the first, you know, it's a darn problem is. Yeah, because if you have this, first of all, if you're going from, you're constantly going like this as you jump from one distance to the other, or one line of print to the other, or just looking out there, and you know, each person's good like this and like this, and you know, it's interesting because when they're behind my machine, there's no periphery, you know, when you sit behind there. So if they're gonna have a double vision problem, they're gonna have it behind there because there's no periphery locking in. So that's the first indication I better really look at that as far as that's concerned.
So they're actually, if they have that, they're gonna compensate their body and adapt
You know, what do you think the body movement would be, Tony?
More, I would think more of a tilt.
You damn straight.
Tilt to one side, so your overall
neck and
shoulders.
You know more than some of the eye care practitioners know.
Your overall body competence, your body will shift.
Yeah, you have a head tilt.
Neck, shoulders, upper back, low back, so it can actually cause a scoliosis, upper scoliosis of the body.
You know, that's in your expertise. All I know is it's going to cause...
It starts here.
Yeah, it starts here, but it can go throughout the whole body.
And then your actual body can level out, then the neck, lower back, mid back, everything can actually level out too.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a sign if someone doesn't correct all the scoliosis, for example. At that point, that could be something that they can add to their benefit by getting their eyes checked.
Right. You can actually pick up a lot of this. But it's not only that how the eyes line up. It's also, if they don't, or if there's some problem, how well could the person override it? And you can train some of this out if there's misalignment. Because like I said, I've seen people where their aiming system is at one distance and the focusing system is in somewhere else, and somehow they got to put this together. And sometimes you could just build up such a strong system that they can correct anything as far as that's concerned, or you could do it with lenses sometimes. But here's an interesting part. You know, we as optometrists sometimes, and I'll back it up anyway, and even among our own profession, why do we prescribe certain types of lenses, low reading prescriptions? And there's reasons for it. But here's a question they can answer, these individuals. Why, if you prescribe something that relaxes the eye and you put it on, I mean a very minor prescription, very minor, they get a headache with it. And the reason is they don't know how to relax. And let me give you an example.
So it's not the vision.
It's the whole behavior of the person.
That's why
they call it behavioral vision.
Okay.
I'm not going to say something because I get myself in trouble with some of the professionals.
That's okay.
Anyway, let's say, for example, I show you a nebulous target or a really big target to look at. Let's say 2200 bleta, which is like, let's say, a letter the size of my hand.
Yes.
And then I show you something really small. And I can measure this both subjectively, letting them respond, or objectively, I make the determination what it is. Now, if, for example, the person focuses on a really big target or something where they don't even have to focus at all, but they know because it's at 16 inches, 40 centimeters, it's there, and they focus on that as if they're looking at the wall up. In other words, they don't want to do any of the focusing themselves.
Got
you
it.
Can prescribe that a
really relaxed. Eyes are relaxed.
Sometimes too overly relaxed because what happens is they don't know they have this problem, and it's antibehavioral. They've got to use a lot more effort to bring it in. Here's the other situation, just the opposite. That person looks at something here, really big, and looks just as hard on that big target as if he or she were looking at the smallest target possible. Therefore, because of the proximity of that target, that person's going to execute all the focusing. Are you with me?
Yes, so they're working
They're working at it because that's what they do. They want to do all the work themselves. They're saying, if you give me a lens to relax, you're forcing me to relax, which is something I don't want to do.
Their habit is not to relax.
Exactly.
Why would they relax?
Exactly. And they'll reject the lens. That is what some of our compadres don't get.
How do you get them to relax in a natural
way? You can train it.
Okay.
You can train some of that if you want. But then again, Tony, you got to ask the person, are they having problems? First of all, you got to make sure they know what a problem is. Sometimes they don't even know what denial's not a river in Egypt. They deny it. But if they say, Doc, I'm having no problems, I can see this well, leave it alone.
Good.
Just leave it alone. You're not going to do anything for that person anyway.
But it's not symptomatic, and it's
not
the word
It's not symptomatic, no headaches, no fatigue, There's no progression of their visual condition or so forth.
There's no sign of anything.
But also another thing which relates to your profession is the sitting posture of the individual who's reading.
Yep.
Do they read like this? Are they like this? Is the print they're looking at very confined? Because if it is, they might develop certain types of vision problems that are relating to the task at hand.
So if the area is, for example, just a normal book size.
Book size, but look at the angle they're doing it at.
Okay.
Look at if they have to sit like this, especially if they slip that hand in there.
Okay.
Or if they're having certain periphery cut off. In some of the cases, not all, certain visual conditions could develop. Sometimes visual conditions can develop because the person's just rubbing their eyes. Sometimes, Tony, styes or so forth can be the result of stress.
Can you understand? Some people don't realize that. I mean, and define a stye for people that don't know what a stye is.
A stye is just like either it's in the eye, on the surface, or internally. It's a small infection, it's an outpocketing, it's a agglomeration of whatever type of immune reaction is going to need to fight usually a bacterial infection.
Yeah, your body just can't, your immune system drops when you're under stress.
Exactly.
Sorry. And that's how it works.
And it happens in some cases, as far as that's concerned. So this is just touching the surface.
Well, and a lot of it is, okay, if I have a vision problem or a neck issue, whatever it is, how to look at the overall body and go, what's more important and where am I? If I have a low, see, I'm not 20/20 and I have some vision loss, not even vision loss, just focus loss, is that worth it to try to do something different, change habits, and cause more of an issue to the body?
And the thing of it is, the more symptoms there are, the more you'll be able to get the response. Now, this was really interesting because this whole OEP, Optometric Extension Program, used to look at what's called a disorganized person and an organized problem versus a disorganized problem.
Okay.
And the one that's easy to knock out is the disorganized problem because the person hasn't made any adaptations to the problem. And, you know, some of it you just look at, but you got to understand, some of this stuff dates back to the late 1920s and after.
So you're saying humans haven't changed for 100 years?
No, it's just the tasks that we're doing that do. And the fact is that we're getting kids less and less going outside, and we're getting more obesity, we're eating more junk. You know, I had a patient, and that's all I'm going to say, it's a patient, because I never wanted identified. And I went up to him, and he had a tremendous, he's an adult, and he had a tremendous difference. He said, why did my eyes change? Well, I'll tell you one thing, it isn't your age. But if you look at the physical well-being of that person, the type of job they're doing, the weight factor, and certain other physiological factors that you take during a normal physical, cholesterol, triglycerides, their chance, and this is part of it. The eyes don't function in a black box. And what's ever happening to the body is gonna happen to the eyes. And you better think about that.
We look at someone's lifestyle, it has, and the stressors on their lifestyle, stressors being good or bad, it has to affect their vision as a way to, if you want to call it, visualize what's going on, along with their whole body has to be affected.
Mm-hmm. You know, we had an interesting patient several years ago, and this has a little bit to do, this is more organic. She went through brain surgery.
Mm, okay.
And this was about at least 15 years ago, the 20 years ago that I saw this. And the problem after brain surgery was she started walking into walls.
After brain surgery.
After brain surgery. And the doctor, you know, you ever hear that joke, Tony, what's the difference between God and the doctor?
No.
God doesn't think he's a doctor.
Got it, okay.
Anyway.
Yeah, he had the God complex.
Oh, God. Anyway, he accused the patient of malingering.
Oh, gosh.
Accused the patient of just faking in and being a loser. What happened was, when you covered this eye, the nose is the midline, okay?
Sure.
Covered this eye, no vision over there. Covered this eye, still no vision on the left side. Complete loss of vision on the left side.
Oh, gosh.
So it screwed her up which where her centration point was, should she walk off at an angle. So what do? They cut the vision fibers. Well, now as soon as I told her that, some of the relief was there because she knew what the problem was.
She wasn't malingering. She wasn't crazy.
And what we did was we took these prisms that we shifted the world over. Okay. You could do that with the prism. You could take it here and move the world over there. It actually worked.
Did she have to change her head angle because of that too?
Nope.
Wow.
Not for this. This worked pretty well. Went back to school. I think she wound up driving again. Totally a normal person. Second thing, just to show you how we do deal with some pathology,
sure.
Headaches and blurred vision come in. Well, got headaches and blurred vision. And by the way, this is on my YouTube or whatever. One thing on my, Facebook.com/RanchoEyeDoctor, E-Y-E.
Okay. I'm gonna link everything to your videos and your page, okay. Everything else.
This lady had headaches. She had a blurred optic nerve, so immediately this is way beyond my scope, but also she had a peripheral vision problem that related to both eyes.
Got
so that
it.
Tells you it's the brain.
Got it. So it's, when it's on both sides.
When it's on both sides and it's symmetrical, it's the brain.
Got it. Okay.
Wound up, it took for a relatively long time, almost too long, for her to get her referral.
Yes.
And she wound up having about a half an inch aneurysm in the brain.
Wow.
Immediately rushed her into surgery. It ruptured on the operating table.
Jeez.
And she lost the eye, but we saved her life. She's only in her 40s.
Was the aneurysm behind the optic nerve or on the optic
nerve?
It would have to be
for binocular field defect from the pituitary on back.
Okay. So it's more Sigma Wilson back.
Because it had to be somewhere there.
Okay.
It had to be somewhere there because it was binocular.
Okay.
Now the visual field in the other eye disappeared as soon as we did this. The other eye of course lost vision. But she was alive and she did a video for me, a minute and a half. 6 years later, she's great. And basically the neurosurgeon said, we didn't know these guys, the optometrists do this stuff. He says, go give him a hug because he actually saved her life.
Well, it's amazing when you're the portal of entry doctor for someone with a vision problem, how many things can come from that.
Right.
That's so huge to realizing who the person is and not just going for the vision, but what's going on in their overall life. That has to give them more accuracy with their treatment, with their just glasses alone, how their body's going to respond to that and heal.
It really is. And, you know, lenses are really powerful tools for us, and not just to see clearly,
yes.
but also to relax the person and so forth. And what is it worth to a person in an interview to be able to fixate, pay attention, and...
Well, just be able to learn and not feel stressed about things.
Exactly.
Social environments.
And there is so much, like I said, our niche is getting bigger and bigger, and the amount of people dealing with it is less and less.
Well, because of people's lifestyle. They can't put down the phone, turn off the computer, or put down the iPad. And that's where a lot of issues come from. But there's ways to deal with it in ways to, want to call it, counter that stress of what they're dealing with, because that's part of people's occupations
mm-hmm.
now. They're on there 8 hours a day.
Well, they better get off some of it.
Yeah.
And also, you know, just the tearing factor and staring at just with the contact lenses we have problems with people. We're staring at these devices and it's one of the things they don't even blink. And that's where a lot of the problems are resolved.
Well, and then the chemical reaction, dopamine release with playing the games and watching the videos and keeping yourself excited the whole time, like anything, your body gets worn out.
It really and truly does. And I'm trying to think of any kind of situations in which some of the organic stuff that occurs
yes.
in the body is definitely having effects on the vision, and that's just straight with the macula and so forth. I mean, there is a genetic component.
Well, diabetes too, cholesterol, things like that also. I mean, sure the
what affects Yeah, and what affects the body is going to affect the eye, yeah. as far as that's concerned.
Well, the eye is the least amount of pressure in the skull itself. Is it less pressure in the ear, or is it...
That I don't know.
Okay.
I haven't.
But has this amount of pressure in the brain, so any type of issues people have, for example, concussions, always check the eyes for dilation, whatever it is, to see if one eye is more than the other, if it actually does work properly.
Yeah, and you know, there are doctors, and I know there are doctors up at the at Western that deal with, specialize, the optometry school, that is, with concussion and this, and vision and so forth. So that is one of the things that I realized as far as being a quarterback. I can gear these individuals to the right source. I don't have to deal with everything, but I have to know that what the problem is to get it referred on. And that's a big part, and that's what I enjoy.
We mentioned giving the patient the confidence, hey, you have a problem that we deal with, here's your referral if need be, at that point let's take care of this. That gives them that 50% relief, just like, okay, I know what's going on now. I have an idea what's going on. I know where I'm going, I know what to do.
Yeah, there are definitely vision problems that they can assess concussion with.
Oh, huge.
Again, beyond my scope
yes.
for some of these, but again, I'm not the first portal in there. If I am, I get it referred immediately.
And you may come, somebody come in with something else that you catch a secondary concussion syndrome, or you mentioned the aneurysm things too, where it just doesn't make sense why they're having these combination symptoms.
Oh God, you can have 90, you can eat a Roto-Rooter of the carotids.
Yeah.
I had one of those too. Patient we sent down, and it sure was a blockage.
Wow.
In fact, the doctor, with all his charm and glory, went up to the patient and says, get the hell out of here before you stroke. Unbelievable what's out there.
I don't want my name connected to your chart when you do stroke out.
Exactly. Unbelievable.
Wow.
As far as that's concerned.
But it's funny how it's usually the person, not the profession, obviously, how they don't understand it's about the patient, not about them. It's about the patient, not about the doctor, not about the staff, it's about the patient. When you make it about the patient, they know you care, they'll trust your opinion and trust that you're gonna help them.
I don't know who said this first, Teddy Roosevelt. I thought it was Zig Ziglar, but somebody said it was Teddy Roosevelt, who said, nobody cares what you know until they know that you care.
Huge.
I know doctors who have the most sophisticated instrumentation that there ever is,
yes.
and so forth. And you know, as you know, Seth Godin, I was listening to an advertisement in our profession, what the heck, I'd get in trouble anyway, saying how you can get more through quickly and less time and less comfort. And you know something? What Seth Godin was going for was like a race to the bottom. And you're not going to be remembered for that. It's like, how cheap can you run things?
Oh gosh.
How much less service can you run? And you know something? You could price your, and well, I like his quote, he says, and you hope you don't win that race.
What's amazing, I was listening to Seth Godin today, a lot of it is he chose a profession out of school that wasn't about making money, it's about making his living morally, that point he can promote himself and live with himself. First people that 5 years after he had graduated his class, or 5 or 20 years, whatever it was, his reunion, he had mentioned those people may have $5 million in the bank, but they were unhappy, they wanted to start over.
And he has the number one blog on Google. You put Seth into
2 million?
Google, you'll get his blog, with Seth Godin for sure.
Huge, huge.
But Seth, and it really, there's a, I really enjoy listening to quite a bit of what he has, but there's so much stuff on YouTube, as you know, we can't even go into
it. Well, a lot of it being a doctor like you are too, you care for people, so a lot of what you deal with, what I see too, is you get the personal referrals. You get the word of mouth referrals. My cousin, my brother, my son has to come in and see you too.
But also, which is neat about the profession, the way I can practice it, is that I have the computer, I put YouTube on, anything that's interesting for the person to listen to, especially with millennials going to school.
Yes.
These are the best of times.
Oh gosh.
And these are the worst of times.
Depends how you use it.
I mean, you could start a business with no brick and mortar, no employees,
teenager,
or no inventory.
Oh gosh.
And if you do it right and are accepted, people generally want to be around individuals who are enthusiastic and excitement. But yet it's a lot of the old books that you'll learn a lot of this, like, you believe our conversations that digressing did? I'll just mention two of them that are kind of my favorite. Think and Grow Rich.
Huge.
And How to
Napoleon
Win
Hill.
And How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Carnegie.
By Dale Carnegie, not Andrew Carnegie. totally different people.
Well, a lot of it
although,
is when you get kids to understand, it's kind of off topic, to understand, hey, look, you have opportunities we've never had, because you can start a website and manage a website as a teenager. You don't need a college degree. You don't need a high school degree.
Hell, you can go to work for someone like myself who doesn't want to get involved so much with social media, but we know how important it is. We love to write. But the whole procedure about going with it, I don't know about Instagram, but darn, I'm on it. And I have someone who's 25 years old guiding a lot of my social media.
I did a post today, and a lot of it was I did a talk at Centennial High School about maybe, I think, in March, beginning of March. And a lot of it was they don't know what a yellow page book is anymore.
There was a thing.
They don't know that book was how we marketed to people in our area.
And yet their conversation skills need some improvement,
of course,
too.
Yes.
But I saw this one thing. This is about 15 years ago, so it's kind of dated. Even for me. Shows a lady, it was a desktop, and it was a keyboard and a desktop. And she says, this lady has been back in the workforce for 40 years. She's typing, going like this. Knocks off the computer thing because the carriage returned. As far as that's concerned.
Typewriter.
Yeah, typewriter. And I typed on it all manual too, man. You gotta hit that
little ribbon?
That A ink. Yeah, the ribbon and the corrected type.
You gotta get a finger strength.
And let me tell you something, that pinky on that A and Q pretty tough to do. But like I said, there's so much greatness out there. There's so much to be excited about.
It's so accessible. You don't have to go to a library. You turn a computer, on your phone.
I'm gonna be celebrating my dyslexic sweet 16 birthday. You know what that is, Tony? Dyslexic sweet 16.
70?
60? Tony, 61.
61.
Darn, Tony, dyslexic.
I just threw a number out there. That's all I have.
No, it's the reversal of 61, 16.
I got it. I'm not that quick. It's late.
Well,
it's late.
I wouldn't have been that quick either. My sister came out with that.
She set it up.
She had a dyslexic sweet 16 birthday party for herself. Very cute, Martha. Anyway, but there is just so much out there. And how to develop businesses online. But you know something? It's still, they got to look at this stuff.
Well, a lot of it is you look at it, you do it, but do you still get your exercise outside of that to counter the stress of what you're doing? That's what I tell my patients. Hey, I have no problem. You can work 8 hours a day at a computer, drive an hour before work, but make sure you exercise beforehand or after work so you do things and position yourself in your workstation so you don't stress your body.
And if you want to multitask, heck, just get on a stationary bike or something and start reading or doing whatever you need to do.
Well, you mentioned too with the glasses, make sure you have the right glasses so you have, if you're here, this is one set, if you're here, this is another set. So you understand the difference there. You can't multitask your glasses.
I usually relate this to golf.
Yes.
You can't putt with a driver.
No, you can't. I tried.
Yeah, there's some
people. I left my putter in the cart.
And this is what individuals seem to do. You got to at least tell people, and I'm there. They might not say, I don't want to get all this. I said, well, I'm going to tell you about it, and then you could decide on what you want to do. You know, there are people, everybody is different. Everybody is unique, and there are certain patterns, yes, but everybody's unique, and they have to be treated that way when you're dealing with patients, and you know, in your profession too.
Well, something in mine is almost, some people don't even know what chiropractors do, but as even with vision too, people don't feel they have vision problems. So get them the door is step one, and then once you realize they have an issue, you can help them where they go, now understand. But unless they've actually tried it, like anything in life, you're not going to like it or not unless you tried it. Mm-hmm. So at least try it and see where you are and see if it can help you. The things they don't even know you have, mm-hmm. which is huge.
I tell you, I'm enjoying this. I've been doing this since I graduated in 81. I've been in my own practice since 89.
Fantastic.
In the same shopping center here at Baseline Haven in Rancho Cucamonga. And that's California for you people and the rest of the country, especially New Yorkers out there.
Well, Dr. Bob, I got to end it here. I'm going to be equipment with what you too, but I appreciate that. Thank you.
I enjoyed this.
And a lot of it is just getting to understand how do we as if you want to call them second doctor, we're not MDs obviously, but how do we get people to understand your lifestyle and how to adapt to that if you need to, or compensate, but also increase your quality of life so you don't have these problems and deal with them before it becomes a major issue and decrease your quality of life, and at that point then you have a problem. You know, let's avoid those by staying healthy, why not?
Good idea.
That's all we do. All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Bob.
And promote it.
Hope you enjoyed the interview with Dr. Bob. He's very well learned, so realize he's confident in what he does. He's done this for over 30 years again. Understand, we both agree with this. When you move and stay healthy, when you eat well,
All of that can be seen through, in my sense, a physical examination, his sense, an eye exam, is where your eyes are a good, if you want to call it, portal to your overall health. So by moving and staying healthy, your body, your vision stays healthy too. Okay, and all this links to his office and social media will be on the show notes, but also to our stuff will be there too. We can contact Nick with us also and see what you want from us to help you better if you understand health and really answer those questions, the what if questions, how to keep yourself simply healthy. Okay, enjoy health from the inside out and have a great day.